Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new series of the Pitching In NPL show. And joining me for this emotional occasion, for the first NPL show of a brand new season, we're joined by Mr. James Hayes, always hopeful. Hello. Andrew Simpson's here, non-league reporter from Cheshire.
Nice to be back.
Non-league reporter from the North East, Matt Carruthers is here, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
From 26-0, Mr. Ian Burke is here too. Hello, Burke.
Hiya, Ben.
And joining us all the way from the European Union in Belgium, it's Swampair.
Is the season ended yet or what?
Let's see how far we get. Swampy, I'll come to you because you've got 8% battery. So Swampy will be leaving us shortly. Did you think we'd get to this stage where we'd actually get football played this side of Christmas?
In all fairness, we haven't yet, Ben, have we really? We've had some pre-season friendlies, but it is nice in a way that the players themselves have been able to get out there and enjoy football. Supporters in their threes and fours, which is so great for the for supporters and indeed so great for the players. It's really, really good. I'm really enthusiastic about the whole thing going forward. I think it's going to be a massive success, and I don't understand why we don't do this more often.
Well, on that optimistic note, I mean, Simo, I mean, it is... A lot of work's gone in to get football to this stage where we are a couple of weeks away from the league season kicking off. It does feel like it's on a bit of a knife edge, but I suppose where we were 5 months ago, we take it right now.
I will definitely, because I didn't think that we would be starting in September. So we're ahead of where I thought we'd be. And obviously, some clubs will be playing competitive games before the 19th because they'll be playing in the FA Cup. So for some clubs, it's going to be even sooner. So it's definitely something that we should embrace. I think what we should also be pragmatic about is it's not likely to be a smooth ride. It's likely to be an interrupted season. How many interruptions we get, we'll see. Those interruptions will be not on the scale that we saw across the country, I think. I think we're going to see leagues having loads of headaches of clubs not being able to play games, and then that's going to have an impact on the fixtures. I think there's going to be a lot. The leagues have to be nimble, the FA's going to have to be nimble, and that's going to be the challenge. But yeah, I'm more optimistic. We're here. One of the other sports that I report on, rugby union, the mood is in direct contrast. They don't think they're going to be playing their sport until 2021. So when you start to compare it to what's going on in other sports, we're right to be looking forward to the new season.
How much work's gone into getting us to this point from a league perspective?
Put it this way, since we last spoke on the manager's show, we've been non-stop. So not just at FA level, but government, league and with clubs, which we have in contact practice 24/7, we've put hundreds of things into situations. If a club can't compete, we have to stop the season and start again later on. A lot of it we can't go into at this moment in time just because it's waiting for governmental approval. Same sort of situation in regards to letting fans back in. They actually playing the fixtures. It's safe for a fact we have to stop choosing night games because of circumstances. That could possibly happen. But in the long term, it's just nice to have football back. I know we have five clubs already playing in the FA Cup. Two have already been knocked out, sadly. It is what it is. It's just, thankfully, we've got football back more than anything.
And Mark, James mentioned crowds there.
Yep.
It's not all rosy, and I think this has been acknowledged by the league that it's not ideal for a couple of sides, let's say. Scarborough, I think actually Morpeth, Scarborough, FC and South Shields all are over that 600 cap for their normal attendance. How much is that going to be a problem if it's not resolved by the start of the season? Especially from your point of view as a looking at Morpeth and South Shields.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the crowds that South Shields are getting, you know, it is a massive issue. They could be looking at being 1,000 supporters down, realistically. And there's a big buzz around the club at the moment to try and put what happened last year behind them. Same with Morpeth. So you'd imagine their attendances will go up, or should go up, I should say, but clearly won't now. But it's disappointing that we can't get more in. I think we are going to have to be used to what's going on. I don't think there'll be too much change between now and November. So it's just one of them, they've got to live with it. I don't think there'll be too much change. I don't think the FA And the government will allow that to happen just yet. So it is kind of baby steps at the moment, and then see what happens from there.
And Birkett, with regards to the actual football on the pitch, I don't want you to peak too soon, but looking at the transfer market and that kind of thing, and players being re-signed and squads being built ever since our lockdown shows right up to this point of a season preview show, is anyone going to win it by 10 points without giving the game away too early? Are you excited about what's being built here for in the MPL Step 3 this season?
I don't think South Shields are quite going to walk away with it like I thought they would last season, and as they were ultimately set to do as things got shut down in March. I do think that Morpeth will be strong this year. I think that... the main challenge probably will come from Morpeth. Warrington are looking strong. Again, Nantwich is your main contenders that you get in time and time again. But you know what? Buxton should be in with a shout. However, I like the look of Radcliffe.
Really?
I think they made some proper good signings this season. And I think, I'm not saying that they're going to win the league or anything like that, but I do think the final shining stallions gone. I think they've got half a chance of just upsetting the apple cart, you know.
James, I feel it's slightly unfair to put you on the spot and ask for your opinion on how Radcliffe are going to do. So what I'm going to do instead is go to somebody who saw Radcliffe a hell of a lot last year, Swampert in Belgium. I'm going to ask you this question now because I know you've got to go shortly, but who do you think are going to be up there this season?
I'm down to 6%. I think it's anyone's. The league is going to be so up and down this season. I wasn't going to be on the show, so I gave you my runners and riders. I thought South Shields would win the league if it was a normal league. I think FC might come second, and then the relegated teams I gave you earlier on, you can discuss them a little later on. I think it's I think it's just so hard to predict what's going to happen this season. I mean, it's interesting also that there's quite a number of clubs that have actually got so many players on contract in a season that is so unpredictable. I'm wondering whether or not they're on contract via based upon COVID. In a way, for players, it's excellent. In a way, it shows that some clubs have faith in those players, are prepared to pay them. But equally, I think South Shields by 25 points at least. FC United will finish second. I have to say, I've seen the professionalism of this show going up hugely. And why? Because not only has Simo got a pencil, Ben's got a pencil, you're looking very professional. Very Sky Sports. Take care, boys. Bye, I'll see you next month. Bye. I'll be more prepared.
Okay. Well, bye-bye.
There won't be a show next month anyway. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Swampy there from the Dynamo Bar. And I think we could all say this, but bring on Brexit. Anyway,
should we start the show now?
I mean, do think Swampy's got a point.
I mean, I did start this off. I mean, I follow rugby league, and we've seen, you know, if one team gets it, the team they played the week earlier, they have to isolate as well. There's a reliance on GPS as well to make sure any player who's been near a player who's had COVID. I mean, it's such a... It is on a knife edge, and it is going to be difficult to fulfil this in a lot
of
ways.
As far as I understand it, there's only one free Saturday throughout the rest of the season. Oh, is that not right?
No, because you got the FA Cup that week as well. So there's no free Saturdays, because if that free Saturday at the moment is an FA Cup day.
There are no free Saturdays throughout the rest of the season then. And teams are going to have to isolate, because there will be outbreaks. It will affect someone somewhere, you know. And we're at semi-pro. It's not like in the Super League where they've got two, maybe three players for every position, and so someone can fill in. We're working with squads of 18, maybe 20 players, most of the teams, and you just can't recycle people that quickly. If half a dozen players have to miss a game, you've got to cancel the match, and then where do they fit in? You've got to be playing Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday for about half the season, potentially.
I mean, basically, I think what we're trying to say to the listener here is, and I think clubs know this as well, and I think the league knows this, we are going to have to be on our toes a lot of the time and just go with it, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's part of the reason why the cup competitions are different this year. So the FA Cup, there's no replays to help alleviate that matter with fixtures, same with the trophy. Sadly, obviously, if a team gets affected by COVID, they're unfortunately going to have to be withdrawn from the competition. It's no Saturday there. We've cancelled the League Cup this year just for that fact as well, to help free up. County Cups, we've requested teams to be able to withdraw. But if they can't, league fixtures will now take precedence. So basically, if you want to play, if teams physically want to play in the County Cup, they would have to play it on a Thursday or a Friday night, depending on the fixture. So we've only got 33 weeks to fit in 42 games in the Premier, 38 in the First Divisions, at minimum of two Cup games, potentially 6-7 if you go far in the FA Cup, FA Trophy, and then the playoffs at the end, all before the Euros begin. Like I say, it's going to be a season where clubs are going to have to stick together.
There's a couple of things I would add on kind of contingencies, the topic of contingencies, after a lot of the shows that we did in March and April saying, oh, this can never happen again if the season gets curtailed. And I've been having conversations with different officials from different leagues in the past few weeks, and it is concerning that on the 3rd of September, there isn't still an agreed plan in place of what will happen if the season needs to be cancelled. Now, that is kind of the worst case scenario. I know Swampy was alluding to that before. But to me, it would be absolute madness to start a new season without having a provision in place as to what would happen if the season needs to be voided. You can argue over what that provision should be, but what the clubs need to know is what they're playing for, what will happen if the nuclear option happens and the season has to stop. They also need to know what's going to happen in the case of local lockdowns or kind of localised breakouts. Are you going to forfeit a game and have the opposition awarded the points, or is there going to be an attempt to reschedule the matches? But that runs into trouble, as Berkey said, because you're still working towards an end point. And again, are they going to take points off teams? That's going to cause tension. Or are they going to try and slot matches in? That'll work initially, but you're going to run out of days pretty quickly. And it just worry me, so close to the start of the season, that these things still haven't been agreed.
Again, a lot of it is still in discussions, but there is foundations in place depending on what happens. So it all depends if the second spike comes up early in the season, or again it's next March. Situation where, like last year, Morecambe was seven games behind it, pretty much every other team in the league, was aware in a situation where you couldn't, a points per game wouldn't be fair as such, where compared to other divisions who were 11-2 or 3 side. I think they're looking at promotion relegation to be a situation this year, so there should be some movement, unlike last year. We don't know what's going to happen with. We can't really say this is going to be A, B, C. There has to be some flexibility to try and play the season through. Everyone wants to do that. But like I say, if we get to a situation where we're locked down for 12 weeks again, something will have to change. So I think that's why the leagues have had to be a bit more open-minded of what's going to happen because of the situations that we're in. I think it's been agreed by the clubs as well that if it came to it, playoffs could be cancelled. It's just top two points per game. Still being discussed at this moment in time what will happen if games aren't completed come May 15th or May 22nd, depending on the circumstances. So there's still a lot to discuss, but I think the main situation is more the fans are safe when they go to the games and we get back to where we can as much as quick as possible where we can.
Got to remember as well, it's not just COVID situation. What happens between every December and every March? We get terrible weather. Pitches get chewed up, you can't play on it. It happens, and we're going to lose games through that as well.
Mark, you're a parent, I'm a parent. I can also see another problem, another inevitability coming down the track. Kids have just gone back to school. This time of year, I fall down with all kinds of ailments and illnesses, some of which I don't know where they've come from, but it's certainly come from my children's school. That's going to be replicated across the board, isn't it? In the coming weeks and months.
Absolutely, and I think that's another reason why we have to treat this season as very unique. You know, we're dealing with a situation no one's been in before. There's going to be a lot of complicated factors. Clubs will rightly call for clarity over what's going to happen, what the contingency plans are, but I have a bit of sympathy for the league in that sense and for the FA because, you know, nobody within those two bodies have dealt with something like this. They've never had to factor in as many different equations is what they're going to have to deal with. So it is going to have to be a case where we can keep calling for this clarity, but it's going to be so difficult to come up with a plan to get this season completed or as close to completion as possible. I agree, I just don't see it happening. I'd be surprised if we're playing football by February, to be honest. And then where we go from there is anyone's guess. But hopefully it won't be the mess it was last year. And hopefully I won't have to have the discussions I had with certain people last year.
And on that note, you're more than welcome to come back on the show, Mark, at that point as well. That's fine. On that note, let's just pretend this is normal. It's a normal season. We've done 20 minutes there of doom and gloom and maybes. But there's one thing for sure, and that is the pitching in Northern Premier League, Premier Division. Time of recording, there's 22 teams on the starting line, ready to go. And we're going to quickly go through some of these teams, very broad brushed, because we're 3 weeks before the start of the season. So I'm sure it's going to change, but we'll do it in alphabetical order. So where should we go to first? Birke, come to you first. Ashton United, what's your thoughts?
Well, they've made a lot of very good signings, I think. You've got Jake Cotterill there coming from Charlie. He's done wonders at that club there. Michael Rains as well, spent the last couple of years at Hartlepool before that, been in the Football League. But also a player that Cleggy knows very well in Tom Bentham coming in too. So they've got a lot of experience there, but you cast your mind back to this time last year, and what did Jody Banning do? He brought in a lot of experience, and it didn't quite work out. That said, Cleggy, he's had a big clear out of the deadwood, all the players that just weren't pulling the weight last season. He's kept a lot of very good, talented players there, Louis Ormond and Liam Thompson, etc. You know, very, very good players. But it's going to be really interesting. I think they're the team to watch for. You don't quite know what's going to happen with them. And I think they're going to do well. I really hope they're going to do well.
And it's interesting, isn't it, Mark? Because there was a few teams who we thought last season were going to do well, who didn't. And Ashton United were certainly one of those teams.
Sometimes when a team covers down from the National League North, they always have a season like Ashton have where, you know, the struggle, they may, you know, bounce around sort of mid-table, below mid-table. And they just need time to get that relegation out of the system. And I just wonder if that's maybe happened at Ashton. You know, they've got a new manager, reasonably new manager in there, in Michael Clegg. And he's kind of got his stamp on the team now. So I agree. I'm not sure what they'll do this season, but I think they will have a better season than they did last year.
James,
not that season ever happened now, but, you know.
I forget that sometimes, Mark. But it was a good pre-season. Let's call it that. James, let's come to you for the next team, Atherton Colls. Obviously, with Michael Clegg leaving, it was a bit of an up and down season for Atherton. Do you think it's going to be a bit more progress this year?
Well, they've done a complete rebuild job as well, similar to Ashton. So I don't think we'll have a similar sort of start what he had last year, where he struggled to find the base. They're used to this division now a little bit, and that's going to work to their advantage. A lot of the players they got last year are former Radcliffe players or players who played with Runcorn. They've just got to avoid the start of the season that they had last year, where they were struggling down the bottom end.
I was going to say, though, James, I mean, they've made some good signings. Rick Smith and Lewis Dole from Accrington. So it'd be interesting, won't it, for them? Simo, there was a team last year who I thought, you know what, if this season carries on, they might make the playoffs. They didn't in the end, but Jamie Milligan and Bamber Bridge. What do you think Bamber Bridge are capable of this year? Are they ones... it's early days in the show, but dark horses?
For
anything?
No. Well, I think that their objective should be what it was this time last year, and that's to stay in the Premier Division. That's not me being pessimistic. That's a view taken on a lot of the teams that were below them when the season was cancelled are going to be much, much stronger. What Jamie has done is he's largely kept together the team that, you know, he'd got a tune out of them. They'd done really well. They'd kind of motored up the table, and you know, we were worried for them last season, and he got them well clear of danger. So that keeping that core together is understandably been very important for him. They have lost Kieran Charnock, who's retired, so there's a lot of know-how that's been lost at the back that they need to replace. I think they have kept hold of Richie Allen, though, which is massive for them. He was a big impact player. One of the kind of question mark is over the fitness of Ali Wadaka, who's waiting on an operation, so he's unlikely to feature during the early stage of the season. We all know what a key player he is for them. So I think, taking all those factors into account, I think survival should be their objective, and that's not me being pessimistic. And if they do that, it's a good season.
Mark, let's come to you for the next team. In our end of season shows that we did, where we were talking about, you know, the best players of the division, players came up from Basford United who aren't at Basford United anymore. Steve Chettle has moved things around and brought some new players in, some good young players as well. Their objective surely hasn't changed. They're going for promotion, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how they do in the opening weeks of the season, just to see how that squad settles. Sometimes when you make changes to a squad and bring in young players as well, they can take time to settle. If they get a good start, then absolutely, yeah, they will challenge top end of the league. You know, Shettle's been then done it as a player, as a coach, so he's got, you know, he's done well wherever he's been, really. But I do think, again, that the first sort of month to 6 weeks of the season will be key.
Don't you worry, Mark. They'll settle with Chettle.
There you go. That one's for free. That should be a banner, isn't it? That should be a banner. Right there. Let's talk about changes and let's move to another team beginning with B, Buxton, and another pundit beginning with B, Birke. I like that segue. That was good. That very partial. It was all right, wasn't it? But yeah, Buxton have made a lot of signings recently.
Yeah. They're not messing about, are they?
Good sight. Really impressive signings as well. How's Gary going to make this all work, though?
I don't know. I mean, you look through the squad, it looks like they're being greedy. They've got Tommy Taylor in net from Scarborough, arguably the best goalie in the division, although he didn't win goalie of the season in our little thing about that we did. And Grant Shenton as well. Grant Shenton would get into pretty much any other team in this division, and he's going to be warming the bench. Then in defence, you've got Josh Granite, who was captain at Barrow, who got promoted to the Football League last season. It's ridiculous. Mark Kilgallen, who's been around for donkey's years. You've got so many defenders there. How are they all going to fit in? They're not all going to fit in. Same with the midfield, Chris Dawson. Sam Wedgbury, who's doing really well in the Football League not so long ago. And up front, Reece Stich, James Welshaw, Godwin Abadaku, who won the Conference North with Hyde United a few years back, and the mighty Diego De Girolamo. There's only room for 11 players to start a match. They're going to want to move on if they're kicking the heels on the bench all the time. And the highest standard player, Jack Sherratt, or Jack Sherratt, we're not too sure how his name's pronounced now. The cat's been thrown in amongst the pigeons with that. And he said in the non-league paper last week, they had 50 players there, pre-season, training.
You've got to basically say that, you know, when we talk about the favourites for promotion, you could throw Basford United in, South Shields. Buxton, with their recruitment, have put themselves in that list, haven't they?
Well, they need to make up their mind what their objective is, because when I was doing my homework this afternoon, you can find an interview with the chairman, David Hopkins, saying that they're aiming to finish first, which is pretty bullish, but then we've just reeled off who they've brought in. And then a few weeks later, there's another interview with Gary Hayward that you can read that's saying, we'll just be happy to be competitive. We're not going to say we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I would say there's a cautionary tale here, and the cautionary tale is Ashton United, as Berkey alluded to, the amount of money that they spent last summer. And hands up, they reeled me in because I said they were going to win the league. So I fell for it. And look what happened. I'm not saying the same can happen here, but we have seen this before, where kind of one of the kind of smaller clubs goes on a spending spree. We think that they're going to kind of ruffle the feathers of kind of the established favourites, and it ends in tears. It is going to be fascinating to follow, and the trick is going to be keeping everybody happy. Although, ironically, we've just listed all of the signs that they've made. Probably the best bit of business they've done is keeping hold of their best player, which is Diego De Girolamo. So, yeah. Despite all of the names in lights, keeping hold of him is an impressive little bit of business. But definitely one to watch.
The thing is, you can't kid people. You can't make signings like you've made and go and get players that have been in the Football League not too long ago and then say you're going to be happy to compete. People aren't stupid. You know, supporters have been around this league long enough to know that if you're bringing in players like that, your aim is to be promoted as champions of the league. Simple as that.
I mean, there's one team who, Mark, I heard what you just said there. There's one team who are just happy to be here, and that's FC United. And
technically, it's still your first season.
Exactly. So, you know, we're still here for a good time. I mean, the question has to be asked about Owolabi and the gap that's going to be there up at the front. I mean, they brought Michael Fowler in from Fleetwood. on a season-long loan. We saw with Marcus Dinanga a few years ago how successful that can be, where you get a season-long loan from a striker. Is that going to be enough, James, do you think, this season for FC United to keep them going?
In fairness, I say FC United, you've got to replace 30 goals, and that's the big standout point, I think. I mean, obviously, you've got the likes there of Regan Linney, who's done the job in the past with Bamber Bridge. Because remember, in the start of last year as well, the season didn't start until he got Tundi in, because he weren't scoring goals. So that's been your big factor.
All right, arguably the main problem is replacing Tundi, but he conceded so many goals last season, and I'd say that's probably your bigger problem, really. How you keep the goals out at the other end.
Right. Well, I'm biased, so I'm going to say FC United will get promoted this year and have a good time at the same time. Which is
hang on though. Don't you mean they're just going to compete this season?
Yeah, it's all about competing and all about having a good time, Mark. Anyway, let's talk about Gainsborough Trinity. Gainsborough Trinity could put in that list of a team that underachieved last year. Curtis Woodhouse comes in, totally transformed the mood of the place. Mark, can that carry on this year? I mean, the recruitment's been all right.
Yeah, well, I think that was one of the things we saw when Curtis went in there. They started building slowly. They gathered that momentum throughout the season. And, you know, when you look at when the season came to an end, the season that never happened, when that came to an end, they were one of the form sides. So, yeah, they've done all right. They've had a solid summer in terms of recruitment. I dare say the momentum that they gained last year, they will be able to take that into this season. I think they'll be top 10 if they can get a good start. I think they'll challenge playoffs. But again, I keep saying this, and I apologise for that. It all depends on the first 10 games and how they get off.
And stay in Lincolnshire, because Grantham, we mentioned earlier about Buxton recruitment and that kind of thing. Grantham's been pretty nifty in the transfer market over the summer.
I think he's been very good. I think when you bring in a guy like Martin McIntosh, players want to go and play for you. And it's been interesting to read the interviews some of the new recruits have given, saying that they probably wouldn't have gone there, but because McIntosh is now in charge, it's suddenly become a club that they want to get involved in. And you know, he's benefited a little bit from the clear out at Buxton, because he's brought in Liam Hardy. There's also other names that he had playing for him when he was manager at Buxton, so there's an element of kind of getting the band back together a little bit. He's brought in Brad Abbott from Boston, who was with him at Buxton as well. They've brought a couple of familiar faces back from a couple of seasons ago when they had a great run to the playoffs. A couple of those players have come back as well. So very quietly building a tidy little team over there. I mean, what's going to kind of come out over the course of the conversation tonight is just how brutal the competition is going to be in the Premier Division this season. But what I would say is that kind of perennial discussion about whether Grantham are finally going to get relegated might actually be off the mark this season. I don't think they're going to be in danger, which already represents progress. Now, I don't know what their ambitions are, but again, some of the signings they've made, who's now in the dugout, I think they can be pretty optimistic.
Room for optimism at Hyde United as well, Burke?
Yes and no. I think the summer signings.
Hang on. How can you answer that question like that? I said, is there room for optimism? And you went, yes and no. That's not.
Hang on, is there room for optimism? Ben, of course there's room for optimism, but you've got to temper that as well with losing your captain. Bad bowler, he's out for the season, really nasty ankle injury. But it looks like we've recruited pretty well. Really pleased to see actually a lad called Tom Morris coming from Congleton. It's not often that Hyde dip down into the North West Counties League. So for him to come up, he must have something very good about him. And Dave McGurk's got an eye for a player and an eye for a bargain. So, yeah, I think he can step up to the level. The recruitment's been pretty good. I don't think it's been as good as maybe Dave would have wanted. But there's a lot of people in for a small pool of players at the moment. So I think he's done well with the resources that he's got. I'm not necessarily thinking we're going to be top eight or anything like that, but I think mid-table is more than achievable. If we can kick on, finish top 10, even better. I don't think we'll be in any trouble anyway.
James, Lancaster City. I mean, the signing that stands out a country miles, Andy Teague, obviously. But There's other signings coming, and we spoke at great length about how impressive Lancaster were last season. They should be kicking on, shouldn't they? Which should worry the more established teams.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very surprised they managed to keep hold of Niall Calpethwaite, because I had a feeling he would be one of them that would be making jump up to somewhere like Bolton or Barrow. But at the same time, yeah, they've kept the team together, and he's obviously getting Andrew Teague back as well. It's a huge shout for him, because Teague knows his level left, right and centre, but he can still do the job. We saw it last year with Macaulay.
I mean, Simon, we said, didn't we, last year about how the sum of all the parts with Lancaster City, that's how it all works. Andy Teague, he's a Lancaster player. I already know. I don't have to even watch him in pre-season.
Well, he has got a pass there, but you're right. If you were kind of in a computer program drawing like the profile of a Lancaster player, certainly under Mark Fell, then Andy Teague would like emerge as an avatar to do it. Lancaster home to the MPL show reigning manager of the year, of course, by the way. And so his challenge was to keep everybody together, I think, and he's done it. He's done it successfully. The only player that's left was Brad Carsley, who's gone down to Charnock Richard for non-kind of football reasons related to his job. So they brought back Tom Killefin to replace him, who was with down here at Northwich last season. So the big question is, can history repeat itself? They had such a good season last year. I don't know the answer to that. I know that they won't be an opponent that most teams will relish playing. That's not going to change. So, it'll be really interesting. It's very, very hard to repeat what they did. And the same caveat as I just said earlier, other teams have strengthened significantly. Does that make it harder for Lancaster? Possibly, but they did great last year, so we'd be foolish to write them off.
Let's go to Derbyshire now and Matlock. I'll come to you, Mark, for Matlock. And did I see Paul Phillips went in goal this week? He went back in net, didn't he?
Yeah.
I saw that. Judging by what's written on social media and the website, the squad's not been finalised yet. So I suppose it's just a case of we wait and see with Matt Locke about what they're going to do. But I'd imagine the hope is that it'll be a bit better than last year.
Yeah, I think you probably just answered that one for me, to be fair. It is going to be a case of wait and see what they do over the next couple of weeks before the season starts and see what they bring in, what the squad looks like in the early weeks of the season. But I think just an improvement on last year, more solid season, stay away from trouble and just try and build momentum for next season, if anything. I think that's their aim. There are certain aspects of the game they'll have to improve. But I think, just stay away from trouble, put the foundations in place and build on what will hopefully be a positive end to pre-season.
Let's stay in Derbyshire, and I'll come to you, Berkey, for the artist formerly known as Micklover Sports, Micklover Football Club. They had such an impressive season last year. John McGrath wanted to build on that. From what I've seen, is some of the recruitment's been pretty good. So, what do you think for Micklover? Are they going to carry on the progress?
Well, we mentioned this towards the end of last season that Micklover's job now is not to be a team who want to avoid relegation every year. It's a team to become established at step three. And they're going the right way about it. Remember, John McGrath, this is his first managerial job. He's been learning his trade as he goes along, and he's got better every year as he's gone along too. He's faced a few struggles in there too when they looked dead cert for relegation a couple of seasons back. But they managed to claw the way out of it. And this is the challenge now. Can they finish not forever, but can they finish mid consistently and then take it one step at a time from there? And the early signs are pretty good there.
They're a lot younger team than they are when we're used to at the moment as well, so a lot of the older heads have retired, so they're bringing their academy in a bit more at the moment. Obviously there's still a lot of Bevan there and Andrew Wright, but it's a bit of a different squad we'll see from Micklover this year.
Let's go to the North East and Morpeth Town. Who can I go to for this club? Mark!
I'll do it!
You eat your chilli. Mark, tell us about Morpeth Town. It's been all change in the back room. What should we expect from them after such a really impressive debut at step three?
I think what we'd expect is them to be very much challenging at the top end of the league. I know the management change has happened and, Nicky's been there for a decade and he is still involved at the club. He's still around, just not in the lead role. That's gone to Stephen Turnbull, who is, again, very much a new manager. It's his first role But he does have experience in the backroom staff. Craig Lynch and John McDonald have stuck around. They'll be helping him. What they've done is they haven't tried to regenerate the squad. They haven't tried to bring in a lot of players. They've brought in two high-class players, Conor Oliver, who came in from Gateshead, who was a player not so long ago, was playing in the Football League, and Andrew Johnson, who is one of the most dangerous players in the dangerous wingers, I should say, in the National League North at one point with Spennymoor. So they've added genuine quality to an already strong squad. There's plenty of depth there. It'll be interesting to see how Stephen approaches games this season. He was obviously a very talented midfielder in his day that liked to get the ball down and play it, but the line I'm getting from him throughout pre-season is they'll do whatever it takes to win games. If it means go more direct, they'll do it. If they're allowed to play and get the ball down, they'll do that as well. So I can't see Morpeth not challenging at the very top end of the league this season. I think there'll be playoffs minimum, and if they gather momentum, then I see no reason why they can't challenge for the title.
Wow. And here's the problem, Simo. There's about 10 clubs who you could put in that bucket. One of them's Nantwich Town. What do you think for their chances?
I think they've been so consistent for so long that we risk, I think I made this point before, we risk taking for granted how good Nantwich are, how well they've done under Dave Cook. His triumph is, I think they've retained everybody from last season. And then they've also added, it's a really lovely bit of business, they've signed Michael Corral from 1874 Northwich, who had an absolutely outstanding season for them in the Northwest Counties League last season. But what he will do is he'll give Nantwich this really lovely tactical flexibility that they've got now. They can play a number of formations. They've got the players to switch between those formations, depending on who they're playing or depending on how a game's going. And Corral slots perfectly into that because he can play as a winger, as a wing-back. He's even now converted to a full-back down at 1874 last season. He's a perfect Nantwich player. You know, a couple of things I would add on them. They need more from Joe Malkin this season. You know, he was on a lot of people's radars the season before when they had a fantastic campaign when they got to the playoff semi-finals. It didn't really happen for him as much last year. Maybe because there was that burden of expectation on him. So I think he'll be looking to have a better season. And if he does, then Nantwich will obviously benefit from that. But yeah, I expect them to be challenging for the playoffs. I don't think they can challenge for the title, but I definitely think they can challenge for the playoffs.
Now, early in the show, James, you're on notice. I'm coming to you for this question. Early in the show, somebody, was it Berkey? Berkey said Radcliffe wants to watch this season. I know you're going to be watching them, but how optimistic are you for what Lee Fowler's side can achieve this year?
Be more optimistic than I was this time last year anyway, put it that way. Fowler's had a complete rebuild job, so only two players from last season with any sort of Radcliffe team at the time have survived on there. Obviously, we've got Buzz and FC United have swapped goalkeepers, and Cameron Belford settled in nicely. Brought Andrew Owens back from Wales into the Northern Premier League as well. Someone who knows how this division inside out, obviously, was top scorer with Skelmersdale a couple of years ago, if I remember rightly, in the Premier Division. But a lot more older heads and players that are used to it. A bit more confident than I was at the start of last year, was thinking it's going to be doom and gloom. I don't want to. Let's hope for the best.
Let's go from Manchester now to the North Yorkshire coast and to our Scarborough Athletic media correspondent, Berkey. Berkey.
Hello.
Darren Kelly has built himself a squad here, I'm going to suggest, which is going to be starting the season a bit better than they did last year. Thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. They're going to be very competitive. I don't see them pushing for the title, but I certainly see them challenging for the playoffs. They improved leaps and bounds when Daz came in midway through the last campaign, and I fully expect them to carry on where they left off. Now, people, when James Walshaw went to Buxton, there was uproar. Not really from Scarborough fans, funnily enough. There was uproar from elsewhere in the league. How can you get rid of James Walshaw? He scores 25 goals a season. He didn't score 25 goals a season last year. He was nowhere near on the pace. So I actually think Daz has done a little subtle shimmy there to do that. And it could be a masterstroke, and he's replaced him with a couple of decent players as well. Nathan Cartman, one of them, who we tried to get hired a couple of years ago as well, but it never quite came off. And Nathan Cartman still got it as well. He did very well when I saw him last season. And, yeah, I've got a good feeling in my tummy.
They have had
A massive blow, though, losing Kieran Muligi to a really nasty injury on his debut in a friendly a few weeks back. He probably isn't now going to play this season after doing his Achilles, and that's enormous blow for Scarborough, because he was one of their big high-profile signings, very astute signing as well. Daz also hasn't yet, and this is not an easy task, not replaced Tom Taylor, and as we mentioned earlier, Buxton have probably signed one of the best goalkeepers in the league, so it's a very difficult position to fill. And I was reading an interesting piece with him. I think he's been getting a bit of heat because they're not filled all the gaps yet in the squad. But I mean, if there's one guy that does know what he's doing, in Daz we trust, he will get there eventually. He won't definitely. And that's exactly what he said in the interview. He won't be panicking. He's working on it, but you can't just wander in and replace Taylor. And I say one of his biggest signings he's now without, so there's going to be a reshuffle at the back as well. Look how they did under him. I think I have the stat, the trajectory that they were on. If the season had gone on a bit longer, would they have even challenged for the playoffs? Probably just underneath. He knows what he's doing. They'll be fine.
Right. We've obviously, done this show here, and it's going to be an hour long, and we're going to be talking about the runners and riders and all that. But realistically, Mark, it's going to take a lot to beat South Shields, isn't it? Really, realistically.
Yeah, I think any team that finishes above them will win the league. They've done well this summer again. I hate comparing them with Morpeth because we know where that leads you. But they've kind of. They've got the permanent deal done for Jordan Hunter, who we spoke about as the best right back in the league in the shows we did during the summer. They've signed Miles Borney, the goalkeeper, on a permanent deal now, and they've added Alex Kempster, who did well in the National League North with York City. So again, it's a fantastic sign. And Alex, I don't think there's many players in the Northern League could step up to the National League North and make the impact that he's made. And I think it says a lot about him that he stepped up three levels and just settled so well at a York side where the expectations there were huge. He's done fantastically well. That'll stand him in good stead for going to South Shields with the expectations that are there, the ambitions that we all know about. I think when you look at the squad now, they've got quality right the way through it. They've got strength and depth, and they've got an academy underneath it that is producing players now that will manage at this level. So I think even if we've spoken at length about the hectic fixture schedule, people will pick up injuries, they will pick up suspensions, but I can see their academy becoming invaluable this season because they'll be able to throw players in without fear of them sinking. So, but when you look at their first 11, it's as good as a lot of sides in the level above.
I mean, there is that, Matt, but the other thing we have to say, and it's obvious, isn't it, really, the setback that was last year, how much is that going to be hanging over South Shields, especially given we have this potential of a stop start season where you have a game and that you might not have a game the weekend after. Graham and Lee are going to be, they're going to have to be working very hard to keep the momentum going. I feel
they are, but I feel like everything that is coming out of the club at the moment is that last season's done with now in their heads and they're ready to focus on a new season. That's something South Shields are very good at doing as a club, is forgetting what happened the year before and focusing on the new season. Everyone at the club's working hard to kind of maybe use last year as a bit of an energy, a motivation to really kick on. And as I say, I just think when I look at their squad, as long as there isn't that mental hangover, and I don't think there will be, anyone that finishes above them will win the league for me.
Do they have to get promoted? I was thinking this afternoon, this would be their third season, not through any fault of their own. This would be their third season at this level. They've got this broader plan. They want to work towards, professional status and ultimately into the Football League. They can't really afford to have a fourth season at this level. They need to get it done this year, don't they?
I would absolutely agree with that. I think when you look at the business plan that's been put in place, and Geoff Thompson talks about this quite a lot, the money that's been invested, the money that was committed to the legal bid against the FA's decision as well, we shouldn't forget that. That's been factored in as well. So I think, they budgeted this season to be in the National League North, to be playing the Spennymoors, the Darlingtons, the Yorks of this world. And that will have made an impact. So I think, yes, that's been delayed by 12 months, they'll hope, we should say, because they're not definitely up. But I would say so. I think it's nigh on essential they do get up this year. But as I say, as I keep saying, I think they will.
Ultimately, I think it's probably out of their hands. It depends on what goes on with the pandemic. We could be here another 18 months and still not
finish the season.
Becky, we left that in the first part of the show. We're being optimistic now.
How would that then affect South Shields, who were not just aiming to go up, but expecting to go up?
I think there's probably a few clubs like that that you could say around the pyramid.
There's a lot of clubs like that, yes.
But if what happens again, what happened last season happens again, there are a lot of business plans out there, a lot of clubs that will be in big jeopardy, in major jeopardy.
Just to say, I mean, we've been talking about recruitment and player signings and that kind of thing. But Berkey, how important is the acquisition of Jody Bannerman as manager at Stafford Rangers for Stafford Rangers?
Well, it'll change the entire outlook of the club. I think last season they were going down and looking down. The entire season they just didn't seem to have any get up and go about them. There was no fight there. There was no plan, really. And Jody will come in with a plan. All right, it didn't work last season at Ashton, but it certainly worked a couple of seasons ago when he managed to get him promoted in his first ever season as a manager, when they were massive underdog. He's a very, very, very capable manager, Jody. It's going to be an interesting campaign, this, for Stafford. I don't have a clue how it's going to go. They've lost the best player in Jack Sherratt, or Sherratt, however it's pronounced. Yeah, I think he can make the most. He's proven he can make the most out of the limited resources. I don't see him challenging, but then again, no one saw Ashton challenging a couple of years back, so... Here we go. It's going to be interesting.
Stalybridge Celtic, James. I mean, it was. I think we take it for granted just what a good season Stalybridge had last year. Can they do it this year?
Sorry, can I just jump in, James? Yeah, I've got an interview in 2 minutes. Can I just shoot off?
Yeah, before you go, Mark, Whitby. Yeah. Whitby, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Whitby obviously they brought in Nathan Haslam, who's working on the coaching staff there, and they've. They've brought in a few players that Nathan knows from his time in the Northern League with Whitley Bay. Losing Dale Hobson's a big one, but I know he spent a lot of last year out injured. I can see Whitby doing pretty much what they did last year. They'll be solid, they'll be mid-table, they may challenge the playoffs. But I think it'll just be exactly the same as it is most years with Whitby, I guess.
Well, Mark, a big thank you for joining us, and we'll catch up again in the coming weeks for good old fashioned fixture preview. I can't believe I'm saying that, but we'll have one. All right.
Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. Right, back to you, James Stalybridge. James.
Yeah. Obviously, there's still a lot of rebuilding work to do at the moment. Obviously, the signing of Tom Stewart as goalkeeper is a great place to be. They've got to find a way to replace Darius Sosa, because I think that's what really impacted them more last season. But the fact as well, with everything that's gone on, I think Stalybridge have been the most impacted club in the Premier Division in terms of money loss situations. Obviously, they had rugby league playing there, not anymore. Obviously, they've lost a lot of rental that they were expecting. For them, I think it's more a factor of not to try to survive the season, but more get a team to be able to push for a mid table. If they get a decent quality striker, we know they can compete with it there, but...
They have got a decent amount. One, they signed Chris Holroyd just before the season ended. You've got the experience there, but then you've got the youth coming through. Lewis Salmon, what a signing he is from Trafford. Still only 18 years old. Well, he's on season-long loan, I should say, from Altrincham. But he was at Trafford last season, where he scored well into double figures. All, you know, 17, 18, playing against proper grown, semi-pro grizzly centre-halves and banking in double figures. No, he's done brilliantly. And I think it's a very astute bit of business, actually, getting him in. He's quick. He knows where the back of the net is. But can anyone get the ball to him? They've still got Jonathan Ustabashe. He's very, very solid, as we know, out on the flanks. But they've lost the threat on the other side, which no doubt Simo will come to in a minute.
Now, because of geography, Stalybridge Celtic technically are a Cheshire club. A lot of people forget that. But at this point, I'm going to come to our Cheshire correspondent for the last two teams who very much are in Cheshire. Firstly, Simo, Warrington Town.
Yes. It was kind of a weird one to analyse last year, because we felt that they'd not done as well as they'd done the previous season. Obviously, the historical anomaly of being the playoff winners and not being promoted. As it transpired, I think there was some hangover from that. I think the club accept that as well. And yet, when the campaign was cancelled, they'd very quietly moved up to third position in the table. So we're nicely on course for, at the very least, challenging for the playoffs. But I actually think they would have done it. I think they would have qualified for the playoffs. That, despite being the team that drew more matches than anybody else in the entire division, and that's something that they do need to sort out this season. And the reason for that last year was a little bit that they didn't quite score enough, and a little bit that they weren't quite as tight defensively. And they've tried to address both of those. They've actually had a very kind of streetwise summer in the transfer market. There's been a lot more kind of high profile signings that we've talked about today, but Warrington have very quietly made some very, very intelligent signings. I mean, they're delighted to have picked up Callum Grogan from Radcliffe. Brilliant signing, and he'll go into that defence alongside Mark Roberts, and suddenly it looks... And also, they just signed Matty Regan before the season was curtailed, another talented centre-half. So Paul Carnan very much started to address that. They brought in Joel Amado from Trafford, who's been a very highly rated left-back around these parts for a while, so another very tidy signing. So he's getting together... He's kind of plugged the gaps that they had. There was a lot of surgery needed in midfield when they lost Ben Garrity, and I think he's addressed that as well. He's brought in Craig Carney, a couple of other people in midfield as well. The only thing he's not sorted yet is they're still short of a goalkeeper. Tony McMillan has moved on to become a player coach at Southport, so that's something they're still addressing. But I think that the kind of hangovers behind them, that's in the past. They're very much looking forward. As we've said, I've said a million times and we've agreed on this show, they've still got one of the best managers in the league. It'd be mad to bet against Paul Carden putting together a playoff challenging team, and I'm certainly not going to back against him. It's just whether they can convert those draws into wins, and if they do, they'll be really dangerous.
And finally, Witton Albion.
Yes.
Go on then.
I love that kind of the anomaly of Mark leaving early is left.
I know. I had it all planned out in my mind how it was going to go, but never mind.
But yeah, I mean, look, everyone's talking inside the club, but around the club as well, about the high-profile signing of Steve McNulty. You don't need me to educate people listening to this programme about what a good player he's been down the years in non-league. But I think that the biggest impact he's going to have isn't actually going to be out on the field. And you're starting to see this already about the influence that he's going to have. He's taking on a coaching role, almost a mentoring role for some of the players, because one of the things that was very striking for Witton last season is after they'd lost Rob Hopley to injury, they were a really, really young side. So McNulty's come in, he's going to give that leadership, that experience. What a player for Josh Wardle to play alongside. And just on Wardle, by the way, again, Carl McCauley's kind of getting the headlines for bringing in McNulty, but his best bits of business this summer have been undoubtedly to keep hold of Chris Renshaw, the goalkeeper, and Josh Wardle, his captain at centre-half. And then obviously the other changes that have been made, which again is contributing to this buzz around the place, is the surgery that he's done in attack. He's brought in Scott Backer from Stalybridge. Steve Thames is back at Witton after spending a couple of years away from the club, but he was a huge player for them when they got promoted a few years back. And they've brought in James Hooper from Altrincham, who will probably lead their attack. So suddenly they've got goal threat, which they painfully, you know, it's become a running joke on this podcast, but they painfully haven't had for 2 years. And so I did make the very bold prediction to Berkey earlier this week that Witton are going to score more than 40 goals this season.
Wow.
And so what a way to sign off. How are they going to do? I mean, again, you know, there's a nice mood around the place. I don't think many people are talking about them yet, which suits them. There are teams that have got more money. There are teams that have signed, you know, fantastic players. I still think it's a massive ask for them to get in the playoffs. But if they have a bit of luck with injuries, which they didn't have last season, I think they can do some serious damage this season. It has a feel for me of the season when they got promoted and they finished just outside the playoffs, if you remember that first season back. They've got a very similar kind of side to then. So I think they can have a real go at it. Whether they'll get there, I'm not sure, because there's so much other kind of competition. But what a summer that they've had. Brilliant.
The biggest asset, Ben, is Carl McCauley.
He's still the manager, yeah.
For me, he's one of the top three managers in the division easily. And there'd be a much, much less of a club without him, I think. He's been brilliant for him.
And just before we get on to predictions, after Simo made that bold claim of Witton Albion scoring more than 40 goals, he did the journalistic equivalent of a mic drop. He folded his pieces of paper, like, boom. There you go. Anyway. James, I'm not going to come to you for predictions other than to say Radcliffe 19th.
18th this year.
Wow,
more positive. 18th.
More positive. Right, the two people left who can make predictions. Birke, who's your dark horse? Who's going to be champions? Who's going to be in the playoffs?
Right, I'm saddling up two dark horses here. Radcliffe and... Don't do that face at me, Simon. I believe it. I genuinely believe it. Going up should be South Shields, assuming the season gets completed and via the playoffs. I'll take your pick. I ain't got a clue. Let's say Warrington.
Simon?
I agree with what Mark said before. So I think it's really dull, but we do have to have South Shields as the likely champions. I think we are going to get a title race. I think they're going to be pushed, and I think they're going to have to really earn it. But I think they will have a little bit too much quality for everybody just in the final reckoning. For the playoffs, I think Basford will do it. I know there was some doubt cast earlier about kind of how much changes there's been, but they've got such a settled core to that, and he's added quality, and I think he's a great manager. So I do think Basford will do it. And I do think Warrington will do it as well. Like I said before, you'd be mad to bet against Paul Carden. After that, I do think it's a massive bun fight. So I honestly haven't got a clue who's going to nick the other two places. I do think, though, I didn't come in on Gainsborough. I do think Gainsborough are kind of my dark horse. I mean, Curtis Woodhouse was my pick for manager of the year last year anyway. But there's a quiet revolution going on there. And it's going to be one of two extremes. He's brought in so many players who've not played at this level before but have got loads of potential. And he's kind of built an experienced spine to put them around. So it could go brilliantly and they'll completely surprise everybody. Or they might, you know, that lack of experience might cost them. But I back him so much as a manager that I just think that they might be the surprise package. There's been such a massive clear out. So many established names there. So it'll be really, really interesting to see what they do. But the playoff scramble, it could be 8-10 teams battling for it.
How excited is everyone about that playoff race? Because it is seriously competitive, isn't it? I mean, you could make the case for 12 teams to challenge South Shields. And in that regard, they're challenging for the playoffs. So,
well, let's not forget as well, could be a case if situations arise, it could just be the top two at the moment as well. So it's going to be them playoff sides are going to have to push a bit harder. This season is going to come down to consistency. Because if we get 50%, 75% of the season done, and we can do, this is a situation where we can do points per game this time round, it is going to come down to who performs the best week in, week out. And we've seen it in the last couple of years. Teams falling away at the end, but they've still managed to get away with it. They're not going to be able to afford it this time.
Well, there we go. And on that note, that's our first Pitching In NPL show of the 2020-21 season. And a big thank you to Simo for joining us on this preview show. Big thank you to Berkey. Big thank you to James. Big thank you to Mark. And a big thank you to Swampy as well. And the Dynamo Bar for hosting Swampy this evening. But I should say as well, thank you to Damien at the Heating Hop for hosting us virtually as well. Because we obviously can't be there for obvious reasons. But we're there in spirit. And hopefully we'll be back there with a show soon. We'll be back next week with a few interviews with managers and that kind of thing. And then we'll do another show similar to that a week after. And then that's when we're into it, aren't we? Good and proper, fingers crossed. But thank you for joining us. You all have a lovely weekend. And you'll be hearing from us again soon. Bye-bye.